Those major centralized companies that don't want to change and don't want to pivot and look forward to Web 3.0, well, goodbye.
Personal finance, budgeting, cash flow, and investing don't have to be scary words. The We Talk Sense podcast is here to help you learn more about money and take control of your personal finances. The We Talk Sense podcast is not a financial advisor. This podcast is made for entertainment and educational purposes only. All information shared is of a general nature and does not take into account your personal situation. You should consider whether the information is appropriate for your needs and, where appropriate, seek professional advice from a financial advisor.
For more information, please check out wemoney.com.au/disclaimer.
Good morning, g'day, good afternoon, whatever time of day it is for you. My name is Blaise Pengelly. You are tuned in to episode 53 of We Talk Sense, hosted by myself and Dan Chabevsky. How are you doing?
Blaisey, I am doing absolutely terrific. Now 19 sleeps until Chrissy. It is, you can smell it in the air. You can smell it up and down the shopping aisles. The festive spirit is out and about. We're ready to close the year out on a high note. It's been an awesome way to end what would be a pretty busy year, I think, for most people around Australia, finally to spend some time with loved ones and reflect on the year that was and getting ready for the new year ahead. How are you going, Blaise?
Look, I am going very, very well. And I actually have a bit of an apology to make because you might have noticed, if you tune in regularly, we actually missed an episode last week. You might have tuned in, opened up your app on Monday morning and hoped to have an episode from us. But, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday happened and we were too busy nabbing bargains. No, we actually had some unexpected technical difficulties. So we're sorry for missing last week, but we are very, very glad to be back. We missed you dearly. We hope you missed us too. But we're back for a cracker episode. We've got a very special guest coming in today to chat about Web 3.0, which I don't know what that is. Dan, I think you might have a bit of an inkling. So I'm excited to get into that. But before we get into that, as always, let's chat money news. If money news doesn't take your fancy, no worries, skip ahead a couple of minutes. But Dan, what's been hitting headlines this week?
Well, Blaise, we have, as they call it, the industry jumped the shark when it comes to crypto adoption. We all know that crypto is one of the themes here at WeMoney that we've discussed quite a bit and we've talked about in the last couple of podcasts. Mm-hmm. But I think you can safely say, after the Commonwealth Bank made their announcement that they're partnering with the Gemini Exchange to offer upwards of 6 million people the ability to trade crypto inside the CBA app. So let's just pull that into context. Australia's largest bank is now mm-hmm. giving people in 2022 the ability to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, which is just massive. But hot on their heels, of course, is the superannuation industry. And a recent announcement from Rest Superannuation, they are going to start allocating a portion of their portfolio towards crypto as well. So it's clearly gone mainstream when you've got some of the most oldest conservative financial institutions in Australia, you know, adopting crypto as the mainstay to not only their portfolios, but also for the customers to get exposure to crypto assets. So it's fast becoming mainstream, Blaise. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, I guess, to see that a super fund is now adopting crypto into their portfolios. But you're right, Dan, I think this is a sign of the future in that crypto is really becoming quite mainstream now, which is pretty wild to think about. Now, something I saw in the news last week was, well, I heard the predictions right. Obviously, there was Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales, which was a huge spending event last week. And shoppers were expected to spend $1 million a minute, which is, that's a lot, right? But FPOS actually revealed some data saying that there was a surge in transactions, right? So how much on Black Friday and Cyber Monday do you think sales went up by in a percentage? If you were to take a guess, how much more than usual do you think Aussies were spending last week, Dan?
I don't know why I say this, Blaise, but I feel like people are going into this like revenge spending mindset where they've just last year was like, all right, I'm going to hunker down because I don't know what the world's going to look like. Now we've got Delta, Omicron, all these other new variants. So people are just saying, I don't care what's going to happen. I'm going to make myself feel good. And I'm going to say it's like 20%. That's where I'm putting it at. I could be wrong, but I'm getting this sense of the consumers out there. It's like a bigger increase than it was last year.
Yeah.
What was it, Blaz?
Well, the percentage is, sorry, I should have clarified that a bit better. The percentage increase is in transactions, not actual spend, because this is the data from FPOS, so the number of people using FPOS to pay, and it increased by 336%.
Wow.
Were you online? Were you hitting up the sales and nabbing some bargains?
You know what, Blaze? I actually wasn't. I did not spend one penny this whole Black Friday or Cyber Monday at all. So
good on you.
I wasn't quite up by it. And you know what? I did have a little peek, though, just to see if there was anything that I really needed. And you know what I saw? Mm-hmm. I actually didn't see that many big discounts. I saw like things like, you know, 3% off. Well, 3% off is not going to float my boat. I'm here for the big sales. I'm going to wait for the New Year's massive rush out where all the Christmas trees go like 75% off and pick up some bargains then. But yeah, no, nothing this year. How about you?
Well, I did do a little bit of online shopping. I used Shopback and Cash Rewards to maximize my savings. I essentially just bought some cocktail mixes for summer, so I prepared ahead of time. And I also bought a friend a snorkel mask, which I was so excited about because I found this really good one. It's for my friend's a child. and I found this really great discounted mask, $10. I was like, bargain, great present, super cheap. Shipping was $12. So I probably lost out a little bit there, but $25 was what I was looking to spend in total. So $22 for it to be delivered to my door. I thought that was worth paying, but it always pains me when the shipping is more than the item you're buying yourself. Well, that's enough of the news. Let's jump into today's show and chat Web 3.0.
Just a bit of a disclosure today is that Binance Australia and WeMoney have partnered together on a joint effort for crypto education.
Warming up the hot seat in the virtual studio today is a man who spent over a decade building relationships in financial and technology markets. He's got quite the resume as well. He was formerly the executive director at DigitalX, an investment company focused on digital asset funds management. Prior to that, he held the position of chair of finance and was previously the vice chairman over at Blockchain Australia. So you can be sure that this is a man who knows exactly what he's talking about when it comes to all things crypto. When he's not talking crypto, you can find him playing social sport, kicking the footy, or hitting up the beach with his two sons. He's a lover of crypto, Bitcoin, and fintech, and he's tuning in from his place in sunny Perth today. Welcome, Lee Travers, CEO of Binance Australia. How are you going, Lee?
Going really well, and thanks so much for the kind intro. I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you so much for joining us. So I have a confession to make. Dan was like, let's get Lee on and chat about Web 3.0. And I'm sitting here going, I have absolutely no idea what Web 3.0 is. I didn't even know what that means. And by the sounds of it, it sounds like there's probably been a 1.0 and a 2.0 before 3.0. So Lee, can you please help me and our listeners understand what on earth is Web 3.0 and was there a one and two before it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the internet and the way we used it has transitioned in a fairly significant way. When we first started out using the internet, most of the applications were simply the ability to read something online. So you can think about some of those newspapers that wanted to move online. They would simply have the ability to read a document. Or a company that wanted to show off their brand, wanted to show off their products, you could have a look at them. And then when you wanted to come in and purchase that good, you're coming in to the shop the same way you've always shopped. It was really about showcasing things, being a new way to read. And then Web 2.0 is really what we're using today. So that's really brought in a few different things. One of which we all know about is the social web. So how we're all communicating with each other online. We're building up some of these online communities that are hosted by platforms like Facebook and Twitter. We're interacting on those. You've also got a huge range of fintechs now offering banking services, for example, just using the internet. But the next era is going to have a pretty significant change, and we're just starting to see some of the seeds of that. I think from a technology perspective, the first thing to know is blockchain and crypto are a big part of Web 3.0, and that's because it turns into the ownership economy. So what that means is, rather than just being a user, you're actually going to be an owner of some of these platforms. And that means the more you put into them, like, for example, being an early adopter, early user on Facebook, you'll actually get a share of that. So all that effort, all that value you're putting in is actually going to come back to you in a significant way too. There's a few areas of this Web 3.0 that I think are pretty exciting, one of which has sort of been dubbed, you stay for the culture. So you have the communities that you want, they're more segmented, they're more private, and you're able to stay for the investment returns. So that means that you'll actually be, you know, participating in this new ownership economy, investing in what will be, I guess, the next iteration of the most powerful companies in the world. You'll be an owner now.
That all sounds pretty great. I would love to be making money from all the time I'm spending online. But how does that actually practically play out? Like, what does it mean for us as consumers? What does it actually look like, Web 3.0? And how different is it from the days of dial-up and pinging each other on MSN Messenger?
I think from, I guess, an evolution, what we really want it to be is as easy to use as possible. So Web 3.0 is going to look a lot like Web 2.0, except you're going to have those financial incentives also included. So there'll be strong economic incentives to actually use these platforms, create social good, and then essentially be able to interact with your peers and share economic services. So that could be things like sharing art that's only shareable to specific people. Could be things like loaning money to people that you're not having intermediaries come through and take a big slice of that. And I think the other area is around censorship, that we've seen a lot of these platforms actually censor away individuals' content, censor away individuals, the cancel culture. There'll be a lot less of that in Web 3.0. So a lot more freedom of expression, which I think is really a positive opportunity from some of the challenges we've seen with, you know, Web 2.0 and the internet as it exists today over the last 2 or 3 years that has become quite public.
Amazing, Lee. And it certainly sounds like, in a nutshell, is that, you know, Web 2 to Web 3 is basically the people that use the platforms getting to participate in the upside or the economic upside of those businesses. And one particular Web 3 company that's caught my eye, which I'd love for you to get your take on it, is a company out in the Philippines called Axies, which is a social game that people can play. It actually costs tokens to get involved with this game, but people are like earning real life currency or tokens inside of this game. And it's got so big in the Philippines, when you go to like the equivalent of like the Gumtree in the Philippines, people aren't wanting to get paid in Filipino pesos. They want to get paid in these Axies tokens. I mean, that is just insane. Like, a national currency is almost being replaced by this in-app game. What's your take on that?
I think some really exciting elements are popping through that. One is around one of the largest things in finance, in global economies, with, you know, robo-advisors and robots that are taking over control of a lot of manual labor, is universal basic income. Now, from playing these games, you're actually able to earn an income that is in excess of the average daily income in the Philippines and a few other major countries as well. So you can earn more money by playing games than you could by doing laborious manual work that will obviously be eventually taken over by some sort form of robo economy. So that's a great way of really bringing people forward into the Web 3.0 marketplace and enable them to effectively use their skills on a global scale. So because you're participating in this global game, you're actually able to use the money that's generated on purchasing anything you like globally. So the income you get is in the form of a token SLP, which can then be converted into digital money, digital US dollars, digital Bitcoin, digital Ethereum, which you can use then anywhere in the world instantly. There's no censorship. There's no issues associated with, the foreign exchange challenges you have in certain different countries. It really brings you with a digital wallet, into the digital economy, and is also providing a greater income than you could doing, the more traditional work. So there's a huge range of reasons why this is exciting, more so than just for people that love playing games, the ability to earn an income.
Well, Lee, you mentioned an acronym there called SLP, and now if people are listening to this podcast and Googling SLP, and you've
Salt
come
loves
up
pepper.
With...
Obviously.
well, if you've come up with a result of smooth love potion, don't worry, you're not in the wrong place. You're actually in the right place. That is what the token is called for the Axie Infinity game that we referenced, which is pretty cool.
I knew you were going to do that to me. That's why I didn't want to go for the initials or the token code. But yeah, it is smooth love potion. There's a lot of people excited about it, and it is something if you control Axie Infinity NFTs, you play the Axie Infinity game and you are doing well, you'll be earning SLP or Smooth Love Potion, which you can then convert back in to exchanging for digital US dollars or Bitcoin. Or you can, of course, use it to breed your Axie Infinities, which could then generate the ability to have better gameplay or earn more income in the future.
Amazing. And Lee, look, I think for our audience that are listening in, they're going to be hit with a lot of concepts. So we've talked about sort of the Web3 construct, we've talked about these games, we've talked about these tokens. I think people will follow on with time, and this will become part of the everyday vernacular of most people, you know, with time. It might take 5 years or 10 years, but we know that the Web3 universe doesn't sort of end in token game play, but it also extends to other things like decentralized finance, which we have talked about before on this podcast before. But talk more about this Web3 decentralized finance explosion that's happening at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. So decentralized finance, or DeFi, is something I'm sure a lot of people have heard about, much like the metaverse. It is something that is a huge focus of crypto generally. But just touching on that from Web3, it is finance, but it's also that you're in control of your own data, you're in control of your own identity, and therefore your own digital destiny. How you want to manage that in the future is really up to you, thanks to Web 3.0, blockchain, and cryptocurrency. DeFi is one of the first use cases before play-to-earn gaming and Axie Infinities were popular. The most interest that was in this crypto Web3 sector was in decentralized finance. And that's really no surprise, considering how much money is in the finance arena and how many intermediaries are involved that are all charging a small fee for you to go and borrow money to purchase a house, for example, or for you to go transfer money over to a friend in another country. There's a huge amount of fees that a lot of institutions, a lot of intermediaries are all taking a slice of. And DeFi enables you to participate in finance on blockchains, so in a decentralized fashion, to anyone in the world. And we saw with the last crypto run, say 2017, where there was a lot of hype, a lot of interest about what blockchain, what Web 3.0 would be. There was probably around maybe $500 million of DeFi-related activity. And now, the second run-up, people haven't taken as much notice of what's actually happening in this marketplace. But now we're sitting at around about $130 billion of DeFi-related activity. So if you're talking about explosive growth, DeFi is absolutely the area of any industry, any economy, that has grown just with that explosive growth level. And now you can actually use applications to borrow money. You can use applications to trade derivatives. You can use applications to effectively get a financial identity so that you can then be an individual that gets access to lower cost borrowing. It's the largest industry in the world, and blockchain and crypto is coming for the lunch of all the bankers and all the intermediaries that have been effectively monetizing that for the last couple of hundred years.
If I just think in sort of broad brush strokes here about what sort of what's happening, is that there's been a modern construction of the economy or capitalism that is based on these individual companies getting really big, really powerful, controlling the flows of money, the flows of ownership. And what Web3 is sounding like it's going to open up, or the Pandora's box that it's going to open up, is this ability for those traditional structures to collapse and for this new structure to emerge, where we all get a slice of the pie in the things that we do to conduct our financial lives. Is that a good summary of where you think Web3 is going?
I think that's probably one of the more exciting areas, is that the institutions do not yet own this sector. Whereas maybe we saw with some of the GameStop saga, the MemeStop saga, where it was the people versus the institutions trying to drive up the price of stocks that institutions had a short position on, and then doing that through on effectively the old economy, Web 2.0, doing that through Robin Hood. Unfortunately, the owners of that are still the institutions. So what we saw was Citadel Capital come in as one of the major owners of some of those hedge funds that were short, as well as one of the major owners of Robin Hood. And the next thing you knew, there was no ability to buy more meme stocks. And the institutions ended up winning that round quite significantly. So it really sort of says that the ownership of this new economy is going to be people governed rather than institution governed, and that the pipes in which individuals are transacting on are very different to the same pipes that are being used today. And I think that's obviously blockchain, that's obviously digital money, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies generally. And it's something that you can participate in, you can own, and have different governance structures. So, yeah, there's certainly a lot of questions going on about how institutions can participate. But I'd say now is the time for individuals out there to log on, download a Web3 wallet like MetaMask, and try out one of these applications where you can convert your US dollars into another currency and transfer that anywhere in the world, and just see how smooth and efficient the process is.
You'll have to forgive me, Lee, because I'm sitting here and I finally feel how my dad must feel when I try and teach him how to attach a PDF to an email. I don't really understand. I'm not even sure if we're speaking the same language right now. With Web 3.0, is it purely... Is the iteration of Web 3.0 purely related to finance and decentralized finance, or does it extend to other elements as well, or is it only like specifically finance related, like we've been chatting about so far?
No, there's certainly some major applications in decentralized finance, and that's not surprising given it is the largest industry in the world. But we've already seen a number of use cases emerge around social media businesses, so transforming those. We've seen NFTs, so digital collectibles, the ability to use them to generate an income or just flaunt your connectedness to a community, like we've seen with some of the early crypto punks and some of the other images or digital collectibles that are out there. And we're now starting to see the crypto gaming sector. So there's probably a few others in terms of social media, in terms of digital collectibles and crypto gaming that are also generating a huge amount of interest. I think the identity piece is another huge area. At the moment, everyone's using centralized institutions to, maintain their identity and maintain their data. So usually you're logging onto a website via your Google link or your Facebook link. But of course, all that value around that data, around your identity is going to Facebook and going to Google. For example, now you can actually log on to various websites using your Ethereum address. And that means that it's not owned by any company. It's just open source technology. And that means that the ownership of that data, the ownership of your ID, that sits with yourself.
Okay.
So there's a huge range of sectors. I think probably the interesting one to start off on might be just social media, because some of these social media companies like Facebook have recently announced their intention to dive head on into the metaverse and into Web 3.0. Mm-hmm. We had Jack Dorsey just left Twitter, I think, yesterday. Mm-hmm. So he can focus on basically the blockchain economy and Web 3.0. And then the Reddit founder, Alexis Ohanian, he announced, I think, around $100 million fund. So he could sort of build Reddit social media-based platforms that are on blockchains. $100 million, it's just a huge amount of money from individuals. And then, yes, the largest brands we know are all starting to have a look at how they can participate too.
It's time to take a cheeky break so I can tell you all the good things about the producer of this show, WeMoney. Now, if you haven't heard of WeMoney by now, please let me enlighten you and you can thank me later. WeMoney is kind of like a budgeting app on steroids. You can use it to see all of your bank accounts in one place, track your credit score, learn about money, track your net worth, and even set and track your financial goals. If you earn, make, or own money, or have any money, this app will help you. Download today from the Google Play or the Apple App Store, and if you use the code word podcast, you'll earn $5 when you connect an eligible bank account. Alrighty, let's get back to the show. How does the government feel about this? Because they've been pretty slow with a lot of laws, especially when things are moving so quick in the tech space. How does the Australian government feel about this all? And will they be getting frustrated that with everything being DeFi or Web 3.0, like, are they going to be losing a lot of their share of the pie? Are there any regulations around this, I guess? And do you see any regulations coming in the future?
On the government interest in blockchain, Web 3.0, it does depend on which country you're looking at. Australia were really thankful to have that Senate inquiry just recently by Senator Andrew Bragg into digital assets and how that would effectively change the Australian economy. And the results are that Australia is really keen on progressing it. They want to be a leader in this. They see that as the future. They want to be a tech leader globally. And pleasing that the mandate there is now that Australian businesses should be prepared to start considering this, and that those that are currently operating in the industry, there is going to be a regulatory framework for them from next year, particularly around exchanges. I think from a DeFi perspective, you did touch on, certainly that is a concern because of directly the lack of control you can have. And we know that governments like to have a good control over money and around finance to make sure people are doing the right things. I think you're also seeing some countries like China have been very negative towards it, even negative towards, you know, NFTs and the metaverse, and saying that they're seeing that as a potential tool for money laundering. Mm. Effectively, the more a country likes to control their citizens, the more there is going to be challenges with Web 3.0, obviously. So I think to see Australia wanting to take a positive role in it, US clearly wants to take a huge role in it. And, you know, that's sort of around their sort of government being set up as more of a liberal one and wanting to see founders and entrepreneurs succeed and wanting to be a leader in, I guess, the digital assets and the digital economy. So there are risks around regulation, but I think that Australia is taking a very proactive stance towards it, particularly NFTs not being a financial product on the majority, not all of them. Some actually can be classified as securities, but the majority of NFTs would not fall under a Securities Commission or ASIC purview. And then that means there's an opportunity for Australian artists to offer their art on a global level, or for Australian sports teams to participate in some of these digital collectibles like we've seen with the NBA and some of these European soccer leagues that are raising tens of millions of dollars and then having a new way for their fans to interact with the sporting team or with the individual players that you can only get through having that, you know, peer-to-peer like economy and being able to interact directly.
It sounds like we're fastly moving into this brave new world, and there's so many acronyms here, so please put a pause on the show, go to Google, search what the metaverse is, search what Web3 is, search what DeFi is, search what NFTs are. It seems like an endless list of things to learn about, but I'm sure with time this will become part of the modern everyday vernacular. Lee, what are your predictions for Web3 in, say, the next 5 years?
Predictions for Web3 in the next 5 years. I think one area that's been quite exploited historically would be the music industry, where artists have really, whether it's, you know, the record labels and only the major artists actually really succeeding under that model, whether it's, you know, more recently with things like Spotify, and I think Spotify taking, was it 70% or something like that? Don't quote me on the exact number, but certainly it leaves a number where the individual artists are missing out on a huge amount of revenue. I think that music scene where people can buy one, two songs from their favorite artists online, directly connect with them, and the artist receives all the royalties or nearly all the royalties, will be a huge change. And that'll enable you to connect better with the artists that you actually want to support as well. And that's ultimately what a lot of art's about, supporting the individual artists and wanting to be more connected to them. I think there'll be, within the sporting industry, a huge amount of adoption. And that's because you're looking at player IP, you're looking at wanting to get experiences with players, and you've seen some major changes in the way that's moved from effectively league value to team value, and now coming up to individual player value. So that direct connection between fans and between their favorite sports players is really going to be driven home through Web 3.0 and blockchain. I think from a DeFi perspective, the days of spending 5% to send $200 over the internet to a friend or even to buy something online is over in 5 years' time. There's no chance that those fees are still going to persist. Like, it's just plain and simple price gouging. Sure, there's some technology limitations, but those limitations enable the banks to actually gouge those fees. And, you know, getting rid of those is going to help everyone. No surprise, El Salvador was one of the first countries, or was the first country, to accept Bitcoin as legal tender, when something like 20% of their gross domestic product comes from remittances. So money coming in from families that live abroad. So it's just going to be a case that these early use cases are where there's the greatest change that can happen. But over a five-year period, you're going to see some pretty wholesale changes, I think. And for those major centralized companies that don't want to change and don't want to pivot and look forward to Web 3.0, well, goodbye. You'll be very different experience in the next few years, I'm sure.
Strong words indeed. Goodbye. Goodbye, dinosaur companies. Welcome to the Web 3.0 world. Is there anything in the realm of Web 3.0 that you're scared of or we should be worried about?
I think the one area that I am cautious about is, you know, the censorship that you get from platforms has some negative issues, where those that are in power get to choose those that they want to hear from and those they don't want to. But obviously, censorship does bring about some benefits. A lot of people don't want to see, you know, various crimes. They don't want to see people being exploited and things like that. So just how we manage that as a community, I think, is really, really important and something we need to think about, because ultimately we want to use these tools for good and to create a better experience for all. So yeah, that's the one thing that I sort of wouldn't say keeps me up at night, but it's my biggest risk area for sure. Mm.
Amazing, Lee, and what a good way to end today's episode on. I look forward to joining you all in the metaverse. Blaze and Lee, we're going to be in there watching a virtual Smashing Pumpkins concert, trading our NFTs, you know, in real time. It's going to be awesome. Lee, thank you so much for joining the show, and would love to hear a little bit more about, you know, where you see the world with Binance and Binance Australia. How what's your take on Web3 and the world, and how are you guys participating in that?
Yeah, with Binance Australia, we've had some pretty extraordinary growth from a user perspective since we started in July of 2020. So a little bit over, around about 18 months of growth, and we're sitting at 700,000 customers already. So wow. I really haven't heard of company in Australia that's grown at that sort of speed before. And it's amazing to sort of be a part of that. And that just gives us an opportunity to really introduce people into that Web3, into that metaverse in a safe way, in an educated way. So a big focus for us is on the education side with Binance Academy, making sure people understand the risks and the opportunities, which metaverse Web 3.0 brings. The other one is making sure that we manage our license footprint in a way that has growth in Australia from the current, what is it, maybe 1.5 million users to something closer to where you're seeing in the equities world of 10 million. So how we manage that staged growth in a way that uses the right licenses at the right point, brings the government along, brings regulators across the journey so they understand where it's going. And I think another one, touching on the artists that you mentioned earlier, Blaze, what about bringing in the NFT marketplace? Globally, 65, 70 million users, I think Binance is now, and maybe having that sort of audience for Australian artists would be pretty exciting to really see, you know, their creations get access to a global pool of buyers that want to interact. So, yeah, I think for us, there's a huge amount of opportunities, just making sure we do so in a way that both protects our users and educates them is pretty important to us. And I think also touches on that WeMoney partnership that we just announced. Great to be working with both of you on that front and just seeing the values that you have, as well as the audience that you're building and the community you're building to help each other through these changes to better manage the digital economy is something that excites us in a big way.
Yeah, it excites us too. Thank you so much, Lee. If our listeners want to find out more about you or more about Binance Australia, where should they go?
We're very active on all socials. You can connect with us directly on our Telegram account at Binance Australia. Otherwise, the usual social media platforms would be Twitter, YouTube, there's a heap of videos, heap of content there, Facebook and LinkedIn, which we've started up recently too, to appeal to more of the institutional crowd that is definitely joining the party for crypto going forward.
Awesome.
Well, Lee, we will leave all those links in the show notes below. Thank you so much for your time today, mate. And we're looking forward to watching you grow here in Australia and beyond.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks, Blaze. Great to be a part of it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lee. And as Dan said, see you in the metaverse. Catch ya.
See you guys there.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in to another episode of We Talk Sense. The best favor that you can give Blaze and I is by heading to Apple Podcasts and giving us a review or spreading the word about financial wellness to somebody that you care about. Feel free to give them the show, get them to tune in, and hopefully they can improve their own financial well-being.
If you've got any questions about Web 3.0, anything about personal finance that you'd like us to discuss in the show, or you'd like to provide some feedback, please slide on into our DMs. You can find us on Instagram at GetWeMoney, or we're even on TikTok at GetWeMoney, so we'll see you there.
And remember, you can get involved in the WeMoney community and download the app for free on the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a fabulous week ahead, and we'll catch you next Monday for the second last episode of 2021.
See ya.
Goodbye.